You're gonna cut off. You're all gonna leave before you get too far. You're like, yeah, I know what I know.
If you're watching this on our live stream, you'll get the translation of what we just said.
Brendan, we fundamentally, as a society, have issues with war, economy, housing market, the trading of goods. Three of those things are probably the same thing. We don't deserve Dune 2. Much like the first one.
We don't deserve Dune 2
even
more than we didn't deserve Dune 1.
Are you saying we deserve it less than before?
That's what I'm saying. I
haven't felt this way since Return of the King. Just, I don't get me wrong. I've loved a lot of movies.
I have too.
Been emotional in a lot of movies. Like, I have a list of my favorite movies for the last, like, 10 years. We've talked about many of them. This is that. Like, it is so cool to be alive in a time where, like, there are still insanely amazing, beautiful, gorgeous, thematically interesting movies are existing. And you, if you hear nothing else, go see this movie as fast as you can. Give all of your dollars to Warner Brothers and buy the Dune popcorn bucket so you can go home and eat it.
And then sell it for $200 on eBay.
Do you have one?
I was going to pick one up on vacation, but we had to get to our flight too quick. I should have written this down. My favorite quote from, I'm going to paraphrase my favorite quote from a review, is that watching Dune 2, you feel like you are watching something that has been forever and always etched into the canon of cinema before you even saw it.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my gosh. It feels like it came out before, you know, you did. And you're just like, oh, they're just re-releasing it to go to the theaters. Like, that's, yes. Well said.
We talked about Dune 1. I felt watching Dune 1 that it was the weirdest experience because I felt like I'd seen it before because it so matched what I read when I read Dune.
Yes,
it was so close to the images I had in my head as I read it.
Yes.
I did not have that feeling in Dune 2. Dune 2, he changes a lot more than he did in Dune 1.
He does, yep.
And
he does.
In the first viewing, I was distracted by some of those changes. I think I would have... I really liked it. I immediately went and saw it like 4 days later, and I was like, so I watched it and I really liked it, and it just oozed into my brain with tendrils drilling deeper, and every change that I thought it was like, that was the right call, and
like
then I saw it again and I was going,
dunes. Yes.
Holy crap. The second viewing, first viewing was great, like 9 out of 10. Second viewing was top 10 movies of all time.
I had the privilege once to meet Scott Teams at a party. Scott Teams is a writer and director. He has worked with Scott Derrickson, Stephen King. His big movie is That Evening Sun with Hal Halbert. It is an insanely good indie film. It's very much like all the Southern Gothic stuff that we love to read. It is that on crack. It is so good. And I had the privilege of meeting him one time, and it was right during the time when The Tree of Life came out. And he said, for a moment in the theater, I wanted to put my hands up in praise because I felt like this was all of creation coming together. And it's like, I kind of had that feeling with Dune 2 where I was like, I want to stand up and give glory. Like, just, oh my goodness.
It's a different kind of feeling watching Dune. I mean, Tree of Life is the celebration of creation. Dune 2 is bleak, man.
It is, but there's so much beauty in that. And I mean,
So the main thing I think he changed is he took the tragedy and he dialed it up.
Yeah.
And that tragedy, it was like reading Antigone. I mean, it was Shakespearean. it's so incredible.
That was my only thing where I'm just like, Shani is acting not the way she really acted in the book, cuz I mean, they're going to have kids together. Like, it's there's further stuff story.
Well, so how many of you read?
One.
Okay. So I read the first four. It's hard to say. Look, it's not a happy story. It's at no point is it a happy story.
Yeah, I think somebody posted it well on TikTok where it was like, Dune 3, you all didn't believe me? Paul's a bad guy? Here's some stuff. 4, you still don't believe me? Okay, here
right.
we go. So,
but that's it. That's the thing. Yes, Paul is a bad guy, But he is not a Machiavellian supervillain. He is a tragic figure that is trapped in the hubris of his existence.
Frank Herbert said it best in an interview, which now I'm diving through all of his interviews, and he sounds just like a nerd like us. It's so awesome.
Yeah, I've watched a couple. Somebody of it had, surprised me how charming he is.
Yeah, there's the one
because the books are way bleak.
Right. No, the one that I found last night was literally some dude with a tape recorder. He's like, okay, it's 1965. I'm in Frank Herbert's house. Here's the people here. And it's like an hour and a half of just talking about
That's
the book.
That's fabulous.
And there's a line where he said something to the extent of, the only difference between, I'm going to botch this, the only difference between a hero and an anti-hero is where the story stops.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, I mean, gosh. So I saw this last week at the Icon Cinema in Colorado Springs, which is, of course, the biggest screen in the state that is not an IMAX exclusive. And they had teased online that they were going to drop it and put in Kung Fu Panda 4. And I was like, oh, I'll just sit on the screen. That's okay. Just to sit on the screen is great. And then they totally didn't. And like, they saved Kung Fu Panda 4 for later. And I was like, oh, it's on the biggest screen.
Good, so, yeah, good, good. That's the way to do it. I did it on the biggest screen we've got.
Absolutely, man. I mean, just everybody eats up every scene they're in. It's a weird thing to say, but just like for the whole 10 seconds that
We're staying spoiler-free for right now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, a couple minutes. We are going to spoil, but...
I was going to say, I knew that Anna Taylor-Joy was going to be in this movie. I didn't realize for how long she was in it, but for that moment she was in it, I'm like, you can be in everything. It's so fine. And then the throat... I mean, once the throat thing started, I was just like, here we go, here we go. Oh, it's... 100 years, Morty. 100 years, Rick and Morty. 100 seasons. 100 episodes. Just come on, give me.
The man can tell a tale.
He sure can. I don't know if I'm ready to yet say that Denny is the greatest director living. I don't know if I'm ready to say that yet, but I have not seen a thing of his that I didn't like. I have liked everything, and I've loved a few. I mean, when I saw Prisoners in L.A., when I saw Arrival, like. The man is...
The last movie that I felt this way about was Blade Runner 2049.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, I would agree with that notion.
Taking a medium, pushing it as far as you can go, while also telling a story that is approachable and human and... It's weird to say this is approachable and human because the setting is ridiculous and the themes are insane, and yet I feel like a better person having watched it.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Here's a random question for you.
Okay.
If you could have one prop from the movie, what prop would you want?
So I made the Atreides ring yesterday or 2 days ago with my 3D printer, and I wanted to take another swing at it to make it better. But
size 10, please.
Sorry,
size 10, please, for me.
Yep. I'm gonna fiddle with it. I'm gonna get good at it. I need to get shinier exciting. Gold, and I need to top coat it. So, because I've already rubbed it the paint all off because I've played with it so much. Now, if I could have any prop, the Chris knives are cool. The thumper, I thought about making a thumper.
That's the thumper for me is the one that I want, and I want it to like work. It will do nothing, but boy, oh boy, like maybe when I put a tent down or something, like that could be my little thing is putting a thumper down.
I've got the 3D files for a thumper. I mean, it's a little big for my printer, but yeah. You know, one of the things I would love, it's in the first movie for like 6 seconds, is the compass for navigating the desert that Duncan Idaho has.
Yeah. Oh, I was hoping we'd see him, but we didn't, but that's okay. But we know that he eventually will see him again.
Yep. Yep.
Is that a spoiler?
I mean,
I'll cut it.
No, I don't think you should. It's fine. Look. Yeah. Dune gets weird. As weird as if you don't know where Dune goes, as weird as you think it gets weirder.
I want to read you some of the top comments from if folks, again, go see this and go see it on IMAX. I don't care how inaccessible it is. I will shoot you some money for gas. If you go to the Dune Part 2 review thread on r-movies, I want to read you the very first comment, knowing that I'll be editing this later. Top comment, 23 days ago, 2,000 points. Just saw it. That movie f***ing rips. Movies are f***ing awesome.
Movies are great. F*** yeah.
Disney's Star Wars was a false prophet. Dune is the true messiah. Colosseum was one of the was one big sci-fi wet dream. Dear God,
oh, good
the
Lord,
movie.
Yes.
And then, of course, my favorite comment, which I think should be the top comment, but we'll leave the one that is. I want someone who supports me the way Stilgar supports Paul Muad'Dib. Paul does anything.
Memes.
Stilgar, as was written.
He's saying he's not the one. He's so humble. Only the one would be that humble.
Oh, I know. Like, I didn't think I did, knowing the source material, which I am now rereading right now, and I just finished chapter one last night, I was thinking to myself, I'm not going to laugh in this movie, and that's going to be just fine. And I laughed like four times because that was amazing. Everything Stilgar did.
And the humor, though, too, never undercut the drama.
Yep, absolutely. Oh, my gosh. Best movie I've seen in theater since The Dark Knight. Yep, The Dark Knight, same feels, absolutely.
In some ways, it's the same theme, right? The story and hero and anti-hero, like you just said, where you cut the movie off.
Fun fact for everyone, Christopher Walken, who plays the Emperor, is in the music video for the Fatboy Slim song Weapon of Choice, which if you have not seen,
it's
just him dancing in a hotel. There is a lyric in the song, "If you walk without rhythm, you won't attract the worm," which is a clear reference to Dune.
Of course. Another fun story, he did not know that was a reference to Dune until the interviewer at the press tour asked him about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we watched that the day before we went with the kids, and we had a dance party as we watched Fatboy Slim.
Choice. Awesome. I mean, don't get me wrong, this was no Madam Web, but this was good.
No, right? You're right, it was no Madam Web.
Oh, man.
Few things can be Madam Web. All right, let's spoil some stuff, right?
Yeah, let's spoil some stuff. Again, if you're listening to this, Andrew, like, let me know if you need a sitter. I'll talk to mom and dad. Like, you've got to go see this in IMAX. This is, I don't know how much longer it's at AZ Mills, man, but it's a 70 millimeter film print, and it's going to blow your mind. Let the spice flow.
Let it flow.
Only in 9 theaters in all of America have a 70 millimeter print of Dune 2. Only 12 theaters in the entire world.
Wait, did you see the film stock?
I did not. Okay. What I did see was the editor posted his timeline of the movie. Mm. So for folks who don't know, when you edit a movie, you're cutting in clips from all the different shots that you take, and the entire movie together with all the sound effects and all the different clips and transitions and fades and all the colors, that's called a timeline. And so the editor posted his timeline for the company that I'm trying to remember which one it was. It's not. Oh, it's Avid. So for Avid, he posted his timeline, and it's like 3 JPEGs long because it's so big and huge. So I see him winning an Oscar next year. I'm just gonna call it right now. I think Dune 2 should win.
I can't imagine anything's gonna come out and make me think Dune 2 doesn't deserve to just take home everything.
Oh, holy crap! It is still playing in Harkins 25 in Tempe, in Arizona. Arizona friends and family, please go see Dune 2 at AZ Mills. If I was there, I'd go with you. Oh my gosh. Oh, man. Yeah, let's spoil some stuff, dude.
Let's spoil the stuff. All right, let's start at the beginning here, because, yeah, go ahead. Dude, what do you got?
I was going to say, first off, like, Florence Pugh, I only see her in Oppenheimer now, just because that was the last thing I saw on screen. So, I heard a critique, the only complaint somebody had in the movie is, like, Timothée Chalamet is too skinny. And I was like, yeah, that's fair. He could be a little bit thicker, I suppose. But
no, that's Paul. Paul is, he's perfect for Paul.
You think so?
I do. He's meant to be, he's supposed to be a kid, right? Trying to be an adult when he doesn't have it in him.
Yeah. I will say, after looking at his filmography, I have seen absolutely nothing that Austin Butler is in, and now I can't wait to see Masters of the Air. I have Once Upon a Time in Hollywood all souped up and ready to go, so I've seen nothing else this dude has done.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a delight.
We had talked about one of the movies he's in, The Bike Riders. That's the one
that's coming out. That looks great. Yeah,
Michael Shan's in that, so that's Jeff Nichols, who I really like a lot, so totally want to see that one.
Yep.
And I want to see Elvis too in Masters of the Air. As soon as I hear anything about Severance season 2, as soon as I hear a damn thing about it, I'm getting Apple Plus again. And I also have to get
that's my plan too.
Never seen Ted Lasso. It's like, once
I haven't seen
quick, once Severance
Lasso
2 comes
either.
Out, this is officially a Severance 2 podcast.
You want? Well, I will totally do a weekly Severance
absolutely
podcast with you.
So from the second Florence Pugh comes on screen, she has that awesome little journal device. You're just immediately hooked in. I mean, if you weren't hooked in by the throat singing, which comes before the main Warner Brothers logo and stuff like that, which is a little odd, but it still preps you. It still preps you for what is about to come. And her little journal post, you know, her little MySpace blog, really about, hey, well, here's what happened in book one, and just in case you came here and you didn't see the first one. And then, boom, we're right back into Arrakis. And,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh, Rebecca Ferguson. I don't think I've ever seen anything in her, any movie that she's ever done that I didn't like. I mean, she's in Mission Impossible.
She should be in everything. She's
as the Lady Jessica, like, by the end, not just the face tattoos and the headdress, I was just like, oh, my gosh.
The whole transformation.
Talking, talking to her unborn baby. That, like, those scenes. I love that so much.
I spent the intervening years from Dune 1 to Dune 2 thinking, how are they going to make Alia make any look at all interesting or work on film? If you haven't read the novel, Alia is born in the novel. There's a 2-year time jump that this movie skips entirely. And so she's a 2-year-old who is fully conscious. And, mm-hmm. and but the it, just ask Twin Peaks crap
David Lynch yeah
just ask David Lynch it doesn't work when you have a 2-year-old on screen talking like an adult and stabbing people it don't work those in images in utero the music when the water of life seeps into Alia's embryonic state is like booming and terrifying.
Yep. You mentioned Twin Peaks really briefly, and of course the only place my mind goes to with that scene is Mr. Burns getting shot part 2, Lisa Simpson, Chief Wiggum, don't eat the clues. What? Don't eat the clue. Burns is zoot. Oh my goodness. Lead them to paradise. Yes, Paul, you certainly
That's his
did.
Last line of the movie, right?
That sounds correct.
I think that's the last line in the movie. Which, to me, just hammers home the tragedy. Right?
Yes.
He's done... Okay, back. Let's rewind.
Yep.
But, so, yeah, the stuff with her embryo, moving just forward to all the prophecy talk, I feel like Denny really hammered home that it's all bullshit.
So the book
doesn't make it. I feel like the book doesn't make it as clear only because there's so much going on.
Yes,
and I think it's also partly because as the reader, you're expecting it to play the normal hero's arc where the character realizes he is the Messiah and he is the great one. He is. The
Messiah has come to pass, the expected one, not just for the the women, but for the freemen, and then like the fact that Lady Jessica is so well positioned to like continue to brainwash them further, like it's so clear.
But I don't think it is necessarily in the book until you read like a second time, where you read it after Dune Messiah, that you realize that there's no bones about this. Paul is manipulating everyone and their dog.
Yep. There was even a line, this is a big spoiler, there's a line in the first book about when he's about to put his hand in the contraption, and she says something just like, be like your father, and I know now she was not talking about the Duke. I don't know. Like
I remember that.
Oh, I got to look it up. But there was like this line that I'm just like, oh, that's a really good setup for like 4 books later.
Four books later takes place like 2,000 years later. So,
oh, okay. Well, maybe just 2 books later.
Don't worry. There's still characters.
Don't worry. The Mahdi is too humble to say he is the Mahdi. Even more reason to know he is, as written.
Oh, my gosh. So, I guess what I'm saying is the by playing up, making it clear how much the prophecy is just a manipulation of the Fremen, and you start the movie with Paul wanting to do what he has to do to get revenge. And then he falls in love with a woman, with the people, with the way of living. And he seems truly happy and does not want to do the thing that he needs to do to stay alive or to get revenge. And then he has to. And from that point on, when he has the turn from I'm happy and I don't want to do the thing that I feel like I'm being walking towards to I'm doing the thing is one of the most incredible turns in performance from Timothy Chalamet and a characterization that I have ever seen in a film.
Mm-hmm.
Goosebumps, man. Just thinking about it. I'm skipping way too far ahead, but when he walks into the War Council meeting in the siege in the Southern Hemisphere,
yep.
That sequence to me is an all-timer scene in movies. He is terrifying. He's terrifying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ah, man. And just for me, like I think the moment when I realized my mouth had been open for a very long time was the worm scene, especially when they're just like, no, not one that big. And then
when he's riding it,
this ginormous worm, and they did it so well. Like the CGI is so seamless. It's hard to tell when there is CGI at all, which Denny's always so good at. Is there a complaint somewhere in here? Nope. No complaints at all.
I have a complaint.
Did it need an intermission? What do you think?
I think need another hour, but that's not because it was too short. It's just because I don't want to leave the world.
Oh, do you think there's a Dune Special Extended Edition somewhere?
he's promised that there never will be.
Okay, that's okay.
Yep, and I respect that decision.
We're glad with what we got. That's for damn sure.
Oh, I don't think it's too short. I just want more.
More. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, Austin Butler. We got to talk about Getty Prime. Man, the design on... Oh, filming in infrared?
Yep.
I was inspired. Floored.
Yeah, because it's one of those risks, right? It's one of those risks where you're like, I could see a meeting where he's talking to producers and he's like, we have to do it this way. And they're like, no, that doesn't make sense. That's weird to pause the movie and do your art house thing. And then it's like a lot of people's favorite scene in the movie was
it's
happy
stunning.
Birthday, nephew. It is. It is.
That was Greg Fraser's idea, right? His cinematographer?
I think so.
Which, again.
I'll have to look into that. But yeah, that sounds right.
But look, former science teacher here, doesn't make a damn lick of sense. I mean, just no sense whatsoever. And I don't care in the slightest. It was an artistic choice that just stunned to watch.
And it's cool to like that they could take that risk with the budget that they had to do something artsy and fun and different. And maybe fun's not the right word, but it was... It did something to your mind as it shifts from the like, I don't want to say the colorless world of Dune to even less color in the Harkonnen way.
How did they film that shot when the Bene Gesserit are walking out? Because you can't fake the infrared filming.
Right. I don't know.
They must have had cameras stacked on top of each other and faded from one to the other.
Oh, I wonder.
That'll be anyways.
No, I kept, even now I'm just thinking about like, how am I going to get the Blu-rays for this? Are they going to be one, two, is one? Is it going to be like, what can I do? I don't know if I don't have a 4K device, but now I kind of really want one.
I plan on getting on 4K Blu-ray.
Oh, man.
Oh, by putting that in infrared too, he actually made the Harkonnen lore richer, right? This idea that they see in black and white and there's no color in their world. And it's so harsh to be outside that they have to stay inside in the dark. Which, again, parallels with Arrakis. I mean, it's so brilliant.
Yep. And I think the best part at the end of the day is the reward, right? The budget was $190, currently sits at $509 million. That number is still going up, which is really great to see. Hans Zimmer, I can see a vinyl for this soundtrack. Both soundtracks, oh baby.
There's three versions of the vinyl for the soundtrack already.
Really? Three?
For two, yeah. At least I know of two, and I think there's two versions of, and then I think there's a director's thing, like I can't remember. But I know for a fact there are two different versions of the Dune 2 score on vinyl, and I think there's a third.
I will say this too, and this is really just a personal thing for me, is like I started reading screenplays, like leaked screenplays, back in 2007, 2006. And so I've come to know screenwriters throughout my years, and I always got to read John Spate's spec script. So the stuff that he wrote, that there was no deal, it's not based on anything. I always was lucky enough to read the things that he wrote that didn't get produced. I mean, he has credits like Prometheus, Doctor Strange 1, Passengers, which I know a lot of people don't like, but I sure did. The Mummy, which did not do well at all, and both Dune movies. And it's just so, he's like in his mid-50s now, but it's such a great, what's the word, catharsis to see a screenwriter that I have admired from far away just completely crush two movies back to back. There's just something so wonderful about seeing somebody who absolutely deserves to have more of his scripts on the screen to finally get like what he deserves. So
it's hard to say no to him now.
I mean, he wrote Passengers back in like 2007. Like that was something he just wrote. You know, he was a computer programmer way back in the day, and I think Keanu Reeves saw it first or something. And he's got other scripts. Like this is one called Shadow 19, which I'll have to find a way to get to you someday.
You've told me about that.
It's so good. He's written a version of St. George and the Dragon. Like he is a great, super talented screenwriter, and it was just good to see his name on the credits. It's like fun. It's just. I don't know him. He's not a friend or anything. I have seen YouTube videos of him, but it's like this is catharsis to see somebody who deserves to have their writing seen and an adaptation at that doing such a phenomenal job. So,
and you know what? It is a special feather in your hat to knock an unfilmable film this far out of the ballpark.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, I mean, there's only like two other movies that I've ever heard or two other books that I've heard were unfilmable. One's A Confederacy of Dunces, and I can't think of the other one right now.
Lord of the Rings was always supposed to be unfilmable.
Was it? Yeah, it was considered that way.
Yeah. And, you know, in both, I would argue, Lord of the Rings, if you count the animated movies, and Dune, there was a version of it that shouldn't have been filmed. In fact, in Dune, there's arguably two. That said, David Lynch's version has grown in my esteem. I have come to love it more as I've gotten older, just as much as I've come to dislike the sci-fi miniseries more as I've gotten older.
I have it on my shelf and I don't see it right now. I think my daughter actually stole it off my bookshelf because I'm just like, I know it's right behind me. I was gonna grab it, but like,
which one?
Dune. I think she like my copy of Dune, my Frank Herbert like paperback 40-year anniversary edition of Dune, but now it's gone. What the hell?
That's gone. What can you do?
Spice melange. I'll tell you what I can do. My wife's cousin Andy has the most beautiful foil book edition of Dune, and I want it so bad.
What is that? That company that makes I genuinely thought
is it
about
Ink Splatter
getting.
Or
it's not the no, that's not the one I was thinking of. They do prestige leather bound, glorious, but very expensive.
If you think of who it is, let me know. I want to scream. My daughter's asleep. Addie. Where's my copy of Dune? 13 months old. Shut up. That's what she shouted back to me. Oh, my goodness. Who else? I like to think that there's some sort of cinematic future where when Anton Chigurh, like, finished his work in No Country for Old Men, like, he was abducted.
Goes off.
It goes off and gets reinvented on.
To follow the lease on El Gabe. Gabe.
Maybe that's the reason why he was acting out the way that he was, is he couldn't find the Moabdeeb that he was looking for. Oh, my gosh. I will say, Christopher Walken is an odd choice for it.
But I think it works.
But I think it's only because it's Christopher Walken. Like, he didn't do his, wow, listen, sometimes you do this thing, Paul. Like, there's nothing, there wasn't that, you know? Thanks for the thumbs up. There wasn't that in there.
I didn't do that. I don't know what the hell that is.
Are you kidding?
No, it's happened like 3 times when you've not been looking.
What the hell? Sorry, folks, another thumbs up just appeared on Skype.
I'm like, somebody's watching us giving us thumbs up.
That one I did for real. Anyway, I thought that at the end of the day, like, it worked really well because the Emperor is supposed to be this kind of older, frailer person that just, I don't know. I think it worked really well for what it needed to be.
There's a sadness to his performance that I think was really wonderful.
When he drops the scroll and keeps walking, he's like, mm-hmm. I'm going to be dead really soon.
Yeah, no matter what happens.
Oh, my goodness.
His performance alongside Florence Pugh too was so good. I mean, they played off each other. You could tell there was a love for her father, even as you watched him dig his own grave.
I just made a connection that I cannot find on the internet, which is the outfit that Florence Pugh wears is almost exactly the same as the childlike Empress from Neverending Story.
Interesting.
Yeah. She must have been the inspiration. Oh, no, somebody did. Doggone it. There's no new thoughts out there. But, yeah, somebody must have looked at that because the headdress and everything is very similar.
Are you talking about the one at the end?
Yes, that's right.
What? Which character? I want to look that up.
The childlike Empress.
Childlike. Okay. I've never seen Never ending story.
That's okay. That's fine.
Oh yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
It was supposed to come out in November. That's right. But the labor disputes. That's right.
Right.
Oh, labor disputes. Which really, thematically speaking, is perfect for Dune 2 because of the Freeman Earth, the disputes with their labor. Never mind. Zendaya knocked it out. Oh my gosh.
The moral core of the movie, but again, playing up that tragedy, watching the heartbreak in those final scenes.
Yep.
I think it's the best performance she's ever given.
Yep. Slamming that thumper down, pulling her hooks out. Oh my gosh.
I have no idea how they're going to transition to Dune Messiah after this movie, though. This movie does not set up Dune Messiah anymore. That is part of the changes they've made. So,
trying to think what they do have coming. Yeah, they talked about Messiah a lot, and then Dune Prophecy. I think it's supposed to be for Sci-Fi Network. Is that right? No, Max. Supposed to be on HBO Max at the end of the year. So we'll see if that actually comes to fruition.
But not major spoilers for Dune Messiah, but the book is at least 12 years later, and Paul and Johnny are pretty happy with each other. And
things
so
worked
I don't,
out really well.
I don't know how you do a time jump with them leaving the movie this way. So I am starting to think, this is my prediction, I don't think there will be a time jump of much note. I think they're going to tie in the jihad that happens in between books. That's going to be the source of action in Dune Messiah. I think it will be Paul leading the jihad. That'll be the change he makes to. That's my guess.
That's a good guess. I like
that. That's my guess.
What else? So talked about the music, cinematography, amazing. Great. Of course. Man, when they finally attack and like that pool of water just starts getting destroyed with like parts of the rock, you're just like, no, that's their special holy water. Don't do that. Come on, you guys, Jimmy.
Oh, the ending with the worms coming out of the smoke and the. So one of the things I love about the movie, the world is extremely complicated, right? I mean, layers upon layers of political intrigue. I mean, it makes Game of Thrones seem straightforward and
like an episode of Bluey.
It's like an episode of like effing Bluey. So I was having this conversation with my wife the other day that it's been about 4 years since I read Dune. It's been about 4 years since I read Fellowship of the Ring. I could pick up The Two Towers and just roll with it. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's my Catholic upbringing, that it's the exact same cosmology as Catholic cosmology. Maybe that makes it easier. I'm sure it does. But at the end of the day, the only thing I need to remember to really understand what's going on in Lord of the Rings is names. Right?
Right. Yeah. What I really need is the spice melange. Sorry.
I absolutely in no way, shape, or form could pick up Dune Messiah, even having just watched the movie and be up to speed and ready to go. There's just so many layers of world building that I would have to refresh myself on.
Whoever picked this edition at the Library of Dune here in Colorado, they picked the one with a full cast and music, and it's awesome. That was the main reason I picked it back up again, was to read Dune Messiah. But just to hear the cast again. And I guess for the Dune Messiah audiobook, it's the exact same people. So I'm just like, yep.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'll have to do that.
Absolutely.
But the reason I bring this up is I feel like Denny did such an elegant job, and the screenwriter did such an elegant job of following all the rules of the universe without bludgeoning you over the head with exposition.
Yep.
And where you most people who didn't read the book, I don't think would even know that. Case in point, when they're fighting the sand trawler and they've got the last guns, they don't use them because the ornithopter's on the other side with the shield on, so they don't want to hit that, causing nuclear explosion. The movie does not explain any of that, but it follows all the rules of the universe, and you just go with it. I just think it was such an elegant, well-done thing.
You just triggered a memory. The scene where she shoots the dragonfly copter down, and as she's mm-hmm. running to Paul, she's like, and then it just crashes. Do you like do you want
behind
to
him? Out? Yeah,
yeah. Because I just love that giggle that she has, like as she runs from like leg to leg of the crawler, and then like, it's just this giant wall of sound. And I'm just like, I think I sat back and I went, oh my gosh. Like, I haven't felt that way since the semi flipped in Dark Knight.
Did Dune win sound design, the original? Because, man, the sound design in these movies is just stunning.
Six. Score, sound, picture. That can't be right. Is that right?
Even just when they turn on their shields. He goes out of his way to choose the weirdest thing for every sound, and it's so wonderful. Sorry, I could talk about this movie all day.
No, I could too. We're literally having a gush about it, you know.
Look, this is like the eighth time I've gushed about it.
It did win best sound. Okay, cool. We're good.
It did.
We're
good. Okay.
Yep. Okay. Good. Great. Good. Grand. Wonderful. Everything's right with the world.
Everything's good.
Everything's fine.
It won 6 Academy Awards. Huh.
Editing, which is well deserved. Joe Walker, yep. Did he do the second one? I have to imagine he did. He did. Okay, cool.
It's gonna be. I mean, it's gonna be nominated for all of these again. Even how could it not? Costume design, I feel like it deserves.
Holy crap! Yeah, I could talk about this more. I'm already ready to rewatch it again and just.
I might go see it a third time. Honestly, it's so incredible.
I need to send Monica out to go see it and just enjoy it herself. So I'm already planning on that.
My wife had a friend come over who hadn't seen the first one. She sat her down to watch the first one so that she could go see it a second time.
Nice, man. Yeah. That's kind. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Cool.
I feel really good about this. Do you feel good about this?
I feel great about this. Movies. What a great movies. Thing.
I'm gonna, that quote, I'm going to bleep it out. I will bleep it out, but I love that line. It's a great time to be alive. It's a great time to be alive in the time of Dune. This is how all my friends who love the band Tool, Kyle, if you're listening, you were like this as well. When the new Tool record came out and it had been like 13 years since the last album, one of the guys at work, I was like, what do you think? He goes, it's a great time to be a Tool fan. I was like, yeah, it's a great time to be a fan of movies right now. It's a great time to just be alive.
It really is.
Awesome movies like this. And there's more good movies coming out, so... There's 13 reasons why somewhere in here, but just like stick around. There's more movies coming out.
I think it's worth pointing out. People talk about how blockbusters aren't as good anymore. And there are some clear exceptions.
Of course.
But we too easily overlook the fact that you can make what would have been a blockbuster 10 years ago for very little money, and it's brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Go find your indie films. Go watch your blockbusters. Do all the stuff and have a great time of it. And go see Dune.
In the words of Lucille Bluth, go see yourself a spice melange.
Amen.
It's not quite,
amen.
It's not quite right.
Yep.
Brendan.
Yeah.
Have you seen or read up on any of the Oscars for this past year?
I still have not. No, I have not. So I mean, I read all the things. I read all the things, yeah, but I have not.
Okay, you read all the things.
I planned on sitting down and watching, and I never did get around to it.
I think really, as somebody who watched and enjoyed the whole show, when I texted you and you're like, what the hell are you talking about? It was when the one gal won for the holdovers and everybody lost their mind. It was the exact same moment as last year when the dude won Everything Everywhere All at Once and everybody was crying their eyes out. Oh my gosh, it was the same thing. Oh, it was so beautiful. It was so, I was so glad to see her win. And holdovers, I think, took home one other one. I think it took home one other thing. I don't remember. Holdovers, Oscar.
I did think Giamatti should have won it, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's... I will say, I never have this reaction, but there was a moment where I called something, and I've been calling it for weeks, and I called it on the podcast, and when it didn't happen, I out loud went, what? Like, I yelled it.
Which thing was it?
When Emma Stone beat Lily Gladstone for
yes.
Best Actress, I was like, are you up your own butt? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Like, I couldn't believe it.
It sure did seem, from what I've heard and the little I've seen, that she couldn't believe it either.
Yes, she has. Somebody said she has like shell shock survivor face or something. She totally did. She was like, nope, it's gonna go to her. And then she didn't get it. And then, like, you see Lily in the audience, and like, she is like clapping. She's losing her mind. She's so glad that she let Emma won it. And I was just
she
like,
was
this
so
is
good.
This is a good year. This was a good Oscar year. Doggone it! Like, the I Am Ken performance, which
I need to watch that.
There's a moment where, like, he takes the cameraman's hand, kisses it, and leads him up the stage. And some guy did a TikTok where he showed himself as the camera operator, like, who, me? And, like, getting pulled up on stage. And here's the thing. Kimmel actually didn't do a bad job. He didn't do a bad job at all. His opening speech was, like, similar to what Ricky Gervais did at the Emmys when he ripped everyone to shreds. He kind of did something like that, and I was like, oh, I'm loving this.
I enjoyed he's done it before. I feel like I remember
him. He has, he's done it a number of times.
I've enjoyed him. I think he's got a nice enough wryness to him.
Yep. And I will say, like, it was nice until the very end when literally nothing political was said. Not a word, not a statement of any kind that, like, anybody would find, like, ugh, or roll their eyes or whatever, until he made the point that Trump tweeted about his thing and then made a comment. And everybody laughed and, like,
I actually did find that kind of funny.
Right. I'm saying compared to other years.
Sure.
Past,
sure.
Refreshing as all can be.
Well, and at the end of the day, that even wasn't a political statement so much as making fun of the guy who was actively making fun of him as he's hosting.
Exactly. Yep. What else was really good from there? See, you know, Robert Downey Jr. won, and I thought that was odd. Because I thought the dude from American Fiction was probably better. But
I need to see American Fiction.
Hey, it's free now on Xfinity, so I'm totally going to check it out.
Okay. All right.
We'll follow up on that because I heard... I didn't say this on the show. I said this on a different podcast, as a matter of fact. Shout out to future bestsellers. There is a moment where the guy who wrote American Fiction won Best Screenplay, and adaptive screenplay, that is to say. And he said something on stage about, he goes, hey, you know what? A $200 million movie, that's a risk. But you know what else is a risk? Like, try making 10, $20 million movies, or 10, like, he started doing the math, like, in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there, like, my first thought was, this is what every screenwriter talks about when they're at the bar and they have bad notes or their project doesn't get greenlit. They all come back to this idea of, like, we spent this much money on whatever the trend is, superhero or cowboy or vampire or whatever. Why couldn't we just spend this little to make my thing? Like, he channeled everybody when he said
everybody
that.
Everybody who's been in that spot.
Like, yeah! Oh, my gosh. And I clapped. So the Oscars were a good watch. It was a genuinely good watch. Billie Eilish, that song is so good.
I'll have to sit down and do it. I'll sit down and do it.
I think my favorite moment of the night, next to Divine winning the Holdovers Oscar, was when Schwarzenegger and DeVito came out and did Twins.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Keaton is like Batman. They're like, we have one thing in common. Everyone's expecting them to talk about Twins. They're like, yep, we both got defeated by Batman. And, like, they cut to freaking Michael Keaton, who's wearing the exact same outfit from Batman 1 and just, like, staring at them and nodding. And he does the motion, like, from the comics and everything. And I was like, you got this bit through. I was like, yes, that was awesome.
I'll try and turn it on and watch it while I'm working tomorrow. Because the whole thing is on Hulu now.
Just worth it, yeah. Yeah, it was a good time. It was a good time. What else? Iron Claw, I think that's, I don't know. I still have to see it, but I just know that got shafted.
That looks like fun.
Unfairly. It does. I don't think anyone has ever said that about that movie, but hey.
I think it looked like fun. So.
Well, that's all I got.
That's all I got.
So, anything interesting or new right now? Or anything
interesting
or
new?
About? Other than the Spice Menage.
I can't. I probably am.
Is the spice affecting you?
I'm thinking about all the things that I have watched in the future because of the spice effect and all my extensive backlog of stuff that I haven't watched. How about you?
Oh my goodness. I finished the book We Can't Talk About and
intriguing.
I saw Dune
2. Oh, you know, I did today. I finished The problem I have is I've started like 7 books and all of them are important for me to finish and I haven't finished it, but I did finish Dan Carlin's The End Is Always Near, the history book that he wrote, and I really enjoyed that.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome. I've still got to hear that podcast.
It's good stuff. Man, do his World War One stellar.
That's what everybody says. Oh, that reminds me, I have yet to see 1917 or Hacksaw Ridge. I know they're not in the same world war, but I have to see both of those films at some point. Doggone it.
Yeah, I haven't seen Hacksaw Ridge either. 1917 is great.
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. Well, shoot, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Again, go see Dune 2 as fast as you can. It just makes me so freaking happy. Man.
It's so good. It's just so good.
It is this is Shakespeare. It's amazing. It's art.
It is art.
Freaking art.
And you deserve it. Go watch it. Yeah. See it on the big screen. And you know what? I begged you at the last time we did a podcast about Dune to see the first on the big screen, so I got this. So now I'm going to say thank you. Thank you. Go see part 2. You deserve it.
You deserve it. We will see you all in the next one.
Adios.
Bye-bye.